Welcome to The Ether. Today is Wednesday, December 15th, 2021. This is a space hosted by VGX Heroes. It's an AMA with Miles Brooks, CoinLedger Director of Tax Strategy and CPA. Let's take a listen.
Hello, hello, everybody. Just bear with us for a moment as we get the space populated and our speakers set up. How's everybody doing? I know you can't respond yet. Hope you're all well. Good, I'm good. Excited to talk about tax stuff. It's not always my favorite thing, but it's definitely important. Is that you, Miles, under the crypto trader icon there?
No, it's actually me, David.
Oh, David. Okay. Welcome.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yep. Definitely. Thanks for hopping on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my favorite topic as well. Taxes. I believe Miles should be jumping in here any second now.
Right. No rush. We're getting our bearings as well. So appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Looks like we got some heroes flowing in. Obi-Wan, how you doing? Crypto Daddy Pig, Boba Fett, the Centaur, the Dude, Voltron, Duke, filling up here. And everybody else, welcome. How you doing, Obi-Wan?
I am doing awesome. Ready to learn about taxes and help answer any questions I can. So looking forward to it. And my first time coming up on the official AMA session. So welcome, everybody. I don't know if you want me to fill some time by giving my background or tell me to mute.
maybe hold off just for a sec. Michael's on his way. He said his phone crashed, but he'll be here in a moment as well.
Big D, I see you. How you doing, man? You've been kicking butt with your spaces on the daily. Very proud of you, man. You've been killing it.
If you guys could do us a favor, I know a few did already, but if you're just joining and whether you're new to the space or not, that little blue feather at the bottom right, if you could hit that and share our space so we can get some more people in here, maybe some that may not have seen it on either my post or the CoinLedger post. Because we'd love to, you know, inform as many people as possible. And, you know, if there's time towards the end for questions, you know, we'd love to have them.
All right. I'm pinging back and forth with Miles. And I think he's in here. At least he says he's listening.
We got Michael here. All right. We'll bring him up.
And Sun Tzu, if you want to make me co-host, I could help manage some mics if I need to.
Yeah, if you need that. Miles, he may need to be on his phone. If he's joining through his computer, he wouldn't be able to speak. So I don't know if that was mentioned in the email, but he does need to be on the mobile.
That's a good call. I just pinged him that. Let's see if that solves the issue. Miles, if you're listening on your computer, you got to join through your phone. So maybe you guys could give me quick the lay of the land of the VGX community here. And when you guys started, I think that would be pretty interesting just for me. I know everyone else is probably in tune, but that would be interesting.
Yeah, I'm happy to give you a quick rundown of it. So we started in the downtrend of early June, and it wasn't that much fun to be on crypto Twitter. And there was a lot of us who really still believed in the project, and I founded Heroes with Aragorn and Maximus as a way to celebrate all of the VGX holders and give them a sense of identity. And it kind of just spiraled out of control in a wonderful way from there. You know, it was about being louder than the FUD, not necessarily fighting the FUD. You know, fighting, the best way to fight the FUD is just to celebrate each other. You could only, you know, fight so much when really, if you just create a good house party, everyone will just eventually join in, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. And that evolved into an educational space and a community space, and for things a lot bigger and not bigger, but a lot more than just cryptocurrency, right? We got a little Voyager family here going. We've met several of the heroes, have met each other in real life. I had a Southern California meetup last weekend. I had people come through from New York and Florida, and it's just it's an amazing, beautiful thing that we got going here. We went from 3 people in June to close to 600 now. It's been a wild, wild journey and a lot of fun. But I think this is a good segue for us to kind of get started with this. We'll do our basic intro, and I think Miles should be in here by then. But actually, before I do, David, do you have any other specific questions about the community, or anyone on the panel want to add anything as well to the short story of the VGX Heroes?
Yeah, I was just going to say we're a welcoming group, and it's open. If anybody wants to pick a superhero or a sidekick or whatever character from pop culture or real life you want to be represented, feel free to check us out on our Discord. And, you know, there's a list of which people or which characters are taken, but anybody's welcome to hop on and join the family.
Yeah, and I think there's something for everybody, really, because if you're just a pure investor, there are just straight investing channels and investing forums to be found, and it doesn't really matter. You know, the crypto space is super tribal. We all know that. But it doesn't really matter which tribe you ascribe to. There's still something for everybody in there. So there's everybody from the Bitcoin maxi side of the spectrum to, you know, the meme coins and that side of the world. So there's both extremes and everything in between. They're all kind of compartmentalized and covered in the investing channels. There are places where there's overlap. There are places where it's kind of categorical and separated, and it's a good mesh of people just from the pure investing side. And then there's obviously the social and communal side that Floki's already touched upon that have kind of grown out of it, and really were the kind of the inspiration behind it in the beginning was more so social than everything else. Everything else just kind of grew around it. So there's community aspects, there's investment aspects, there's obviously educational aspects, including what we're doing here tonight. And, you know, the weekly AMAs were kind of the brainchild of a hero that unfortunately passed away too early on into the start of Heroes. But he passed away back in August. But his vision was that we would create a forum for people that were coming in to get educated without the scorn and ridicule of, you know, either feeling like any question was too stupid or getting caught up in the toxicity of the tribalism between the different coins and the different projects. So this has pretty much been a weekly forum for people to come in and ask anything from the simplest of questions of, like, you know, what is any particular coin or how does this work or what is a cryptocurrency, to, you know, deep end of the pool stuff like, you know, advanced OPSEC and, you know, mining and DeFi and some of the self-custody aspects and just things that are kind of deeper end of the pool. We've kind of covered it all and everywhere in between. So that's kind of this side of the community. But there's really something to be found for everybody. And even as far as participation within the community, you know, the whole caricaturized hero thing, we obviously realized wasn't for everybody. But to kind of give everybody a taste of what the community was about and that it wasn't just a bunch of grownups, you know, in their superhero pajamas hanging out, there's even kind of a taste test way of participating in the Discord called Sidekick. So you come in and you don't have to engage in any of the communal aspects. You don't have to engage in any of the hero aspects of things. You could just come in and see a streamlined version of, you know, the first 5 or 6 channels and keep it more investment focused and consolidated in that regard. So we're really kind of come one, come all. We don't really close the door to anybody. So this is just a fun way for us to interact with the community in an educational way, but there's a little bit of something for everybody here.
Yeah, the educational and the resources part of our community is open to everyone in all communities, right? But if you do want to play along, we sure know how to have some fun. Miles, welcome. I see you finally made it.
Thank you. Thank you. This is my first time with Twitter Spaces, so had to figure out I needed to be on mobile. But really appreciate being here. Glad to be a part of this.
And on that note, I think we'll officially get this thing started. Everyone, welcome to the VGX Heroes Wednesday Educational AMA. let's go around to the panel and introduce each other. Well, first off, we have Crypto Airborne recording this spaces live and streaming on his YouTube. So, you know, no need to take notes or anything like that. Just sit back and relax and take a listen. You could always hit the rewind on his channel later. And I encourage everybody to speak up and raise your hand and ask questions. We want as much participation as we can get. This is what it's all about, is educating you guys. I'm personally a crypto tax noob myself. This will be my first year doing taxes, so I'm really excited to learn from our special guest today, Miles Brooks, CoinLedger Director of Tax Strategy and CPA. And let's get started with the panel. First off, Sun Tzu, thank you so much for bringing on Miles. Let's start with you.
All right, cool. Sounds good. I'm the VGX hero, Sun Tzu, behind the mask of the Heroes Community account here. Got into crypto a couple years ago. I don't know exactly, but you know, I'm excited for this as well because it's going to be my first time filing crypto tax. So it's, you know, I've tried to learn as much as I can, but I'm sure this is going to be great. You know, not a huge background in tech or finance or anything like that, but it's just kind of something I've been self-teaching, and this community has been a big help in helping me to learn along the way. So, you know, it's great. I'm happy to be here.
Michael, go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm an entrepreneur turned crypto enthusiast. And at this point in my life, I just kind of like to give back and help educate people in the financial literacy space, whether it be through volunteer education with children to participating in spaces like these or my involvement in the community. It's just important to me to make sure that people are making well-informed decisions and try to help protect people from some of the predatory nature that tends to exist in the space and arm them with enough information to make their own decisions instead of relying on anybody just blindly to kind of steer them in a direction. So if we can help educate everybody to know enough to make decisions confidently, then I think that we're making a step in the right direction.
Thank you, Michael. I guess I'm next in line here. You all know me. I'm Floki. I am the crypto Viking that speaks from the heart, founded Heroes with Lord Aragon and Maximus. Happy to learn with everybody here. Obi-Wan, go ahead. Welcome as well, Obi-Wan, to the panel. Everybody, this is Obi-Wan's first first time on the panel, first of many, hopefully. Can we get some 100s for Obi-Wan, please, everybody? 100s all around for Obi-Wan.
Yeah, well, thanks, everybody. I'm Obi-Wan. Some of you I've had the pleasure of speaking with. I'm an early adopter of Voyager's platform and been in crypto since 2020. And I am kind of in the deep end of both the decentralized side of things as well as the lovely community that we have here and Voyager. So I do have a financial operations background and some technical experience, so I can help navigate some of those questions.
Thank you, Obi-Wan. And Miles and David, I would love for both of you guys to introduce yourselves before we get this interview kicked off with you, Miles.
Great. I can go first, David. I'm Miles Brooks. I have a background in tax, master's in tax. I'm a CPA and director of tax strategy now at CoinLedger. Joined CoinLedger crypto trader.tax really recently, and it's been a great partnership so far, and you know, really excited to see where it goes. You know, I started diving down the crypto rabbit hole in 2017, working at Apperson, working at a boutique tax firm doing individual tax for really billionaires from Silicon Valley. Some of them were involved with Bitcoin and crypto, and you know, my interest in the space, you know, made me a resource to the rest of the firm. And you know, I talked and kind of informed the firm all about these crypto topics we're used to, like custody and hard forks, those type of things that were necessary for them to understand in order to service our clients. And as time progressed, I, you know, started to enjoy and love crypto even more than tax. And so it became apparent to me that, you know, I needed to get out of public accounting and, you know, start building and start, you know, contributing more than just investing. And so that's kind of what I sought out to do. And, you know, I want to make crypto accessible, and tax is one of those big barriers. So, you know, glad to be here and glad to, you know, be a resource for all of you tonight.
Yeah. Thanks, Miles. Yeah. Super excited to be here. My name's David Kemmerer. I'm the one behind, right now, at least, the CryptoTrader.tax Twitter account. Kind of confusing, I guess. So CryptoTrader.tax is becoming CoinLedger. So we're rebranding the business here over the next month. More so indicative to where we're taking the product. Now, you know, we're not going to just do tax into the future. We'll also do portfolio management, portfolio tracking, and build a lot of automation into the platform that can be used more throughout the year. Anyway, so that's for the kind of the CoinLedger versus CryptoTrader.tax side. So I started the company about 3.5 years ago, right as the 2017 bull market came to an end, and have been building ever since. So we brought on Miles about a month ago to really help start spinning up a lot more of our direct tax work. So super excited to have him on, and it's good to be here.
Appreciate both you guys being here and the time you spend with us. Before I hand this off to you, Michael, I just want to say, you know, for those that have questions, let's try to keep it general. Let's avoid the questions that involve me or I, you know, try to avoid those personal, confidential tax questions, right? Let's keep it general. And with that, Michael, go ahead, take it away.
Well, thanks for joining us, guys. And we've got some questions here lined up. If anybody else in the audience has questions as well, we will open it up a bit later too for anybody else to add. But I think we all, especially on this educational panel, tend to field a number of questions in the space. So being that you guys are here, we'd really like to consolidate some of the questions that we get frequently and kind of face them your way. But I think first, we really just want to get into a little bit more of the background between this relationship that's now developed with Voyager and understand a bit more about what you guys intend to bring to the table and what, from the customer side, what can be expected. So what can you speak to about the actual partnership with Voyager or what that means to the consumer level?
Yeah. Yep. Great question. So I'll speak to what I can. So I've got to know Steve over the past couple of years. Essentially, tax reporting in the cryptocurrency space, as you all may or may not know, actually, can get sticky, right? Cryptocurrencies, from a tax perspective, are treated very similarly to equities. So think stocks. Now, where it gets different is the fact that cryptocurrencies, right, are interoperable. So very different from equities. You know, you can buy Bitcoin from Voyager and send it to somewhere like BlockFi to earn interest and then send something into some DeFi protocol, right, and then back out to your hardware wallet. So this interoperable nature of the assets creates this new accounting and tax reporting problem, because Voyager, for example, or any other centralized exchange like Voyager, doesn't have your complete historical information if you've used other platforms in addition to Voyager, for example. So in the stock world, again, because these assets are treated very similarly from a tax perspective, it's good to draw these parallels, right? From the stock world, you all are probably used to receiving 1099Bs at the end of the year that kind of showcases and breaks down your capital gains and capital losses from your trading and investing activity on that platform. Let's use like Robinhood or E-Trade as an example, right? You'll receive that 1099B and that gives you your gains and losses. In the cryptocurrency world, it can't work that cleanly because of the interoperable nature of the asset, right? If I buy Bitcoin from Coinbase and send it to Voyager, Voyager actually doesn't have what's known as my cost basis in that Bitcoin. And so it just becomes hard to report those gains losses. So the relationship that we now have with Voyager is that we can act as this integration layer of, yes, you all probably on here use the Voyager platform, but if you're on other platforms, we can integrate all of those other places so we can track your cost basis as it moves from Coinbase to BlockFi to Voyager to DeFi protocol XYZ, right? And then we can give you your full holistic capital gains, losses, and income reports from all of that activity. So really what we're doing with Voyager is, you know, we're going to be integrating tightly so that you can seamlessly import all of your history from not only Voyager, but also anywhere else that you're transacting in crypto. And then, and only then, once everything's fully integrated, you can get gains, losses, income reports that can easily be imported into platforms like TurboTax or just handed to your tax professional if that's how you file your taxes every year. So really that's the high level nature of the relationship with a little bit of context, right? We're just a platform that Voyager users will now have very simple access to, you know, create accounts and generate these tax reports that can help on that tax reporting front.
So from the customers are all going to be able to participate in the service, or is this going to be exclusive to VLP members or offered at a discount? What's the cost to the end user? Or where's the threshold as to who has access to it and who doesn't?
Yep. So everyone on the Voyager platform will have access, and the deal that's been, you know, essentially negotiated and worked out is that for 2021 reports, so for the past year, Voyager users will have free access to that tax report.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. So, and that's for everybody. So is there, I know that they've got, you know, a little over 1 million funded accounts, but they've got like 2.7 million, I think, at the last public report, accounts total with funded and non-funded. Is there a requirement that it be a funded account in order to have access to it? Or I guess in either capacity, is there going to be, are you guys scaled to handle that kind of volume at the flip of a switch, or what does scaling look like on your end with you guys being, you know, taking on this much load all at one time?
Yeah. So the nice thing about being in the software business is it does scale nicely. But yeah, it'll be all Voyager users have access to that.
Okay, great. And as far as the functionality of it, we'd be going over to your platform in order to interact with it. Is there going to be an API now between Voyager to you guys, or is it still going to be the CSV that has to be requested and then sent over?
Mm-hmm. So that's under development right now. So I can't speak to the exact specifics, but it will be more seamless than the CSV import functionality.
Okay, good. And as we're talking 2021 tax year, we're thinking of a certain date in mind that it becomes available, or do you have a go live date?
So I don't know if they've publicly said the go live. The goal is kind of by the end of January. And so, you know, both development teams on our side and their side are finalizing all of the technical implementations, as you said, so that it's not the CSV imports, but it will be for this coming tax season. Yes.
All right, great. And now I know, you know, prior to you guys forming this partnership, I'd been familiar with your product. So you have numerous tiers of service that you offer. As far as the Voyager customers, is basically you get entry level, or is it going to be a per trade basis? How do the tiers that you offer factor into the Voyager relationship?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the tiers will only apply if you're generating reports prior to 2021. Otherwise, the tiers don't apply. We're giving everyone a free tax report regardless of tier for 2021.
All right. And it could be used with all of their services. Like if somebody has Voyager accounts, but they're also active in DeFi or have, you know, like most people do, numerous brokerage accounts, they can tie everything in through that one account regardless of number of transactions?
That's right. Yes.
All right, that's quite a deal there too. I think that's a good draw for both of you, because I could see that drawing people to Voyager just to get the benefits of having the tax prep angle covered. That's a pretty big offer there.
Yep. So we're excited to roll it out to everyone.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, definitely. And I see you guys are currently compatible with TurboTax and TaxAct. Is there any plans in the future of working with others, or I guess for the average user, can we explain what happens in the event that someone does not actually file via TurboTax or TaxAct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a lot of ways you can file your taxes, of course, right? TurboTax, TaxAct, those are some of the larger, I'll call DIY filing softwares. There's a handful of others. The reports that we generate are compatible really with any tax software, because at the end of the day, all those platforms are doing are importing gains, losses, and income. And so, you know, if you use something like TaxSlayer or something else, I don't intimately know those products, but it's very likely that you can still import our, you know, forms just like you'd import a 1099B into those platforms.
Okay. So it's not like anybody's tied into any one thing.
Right, exactly. And most of our customers actually use tax professionals, like essentially accountants like Miles, to file their taxes. And so in that circumstance, you literally just push a button in our app and it'll send off all of your forms to your accountant.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's kind of the boat that I'm in, where I get 50,000 K-1s from every different company that I'm in. And this would just be another piece of paper to kind of consolidate data and hand off to the CPAs. So
exactly.
It's good that it's turnkey for anybody, no matter what kind of complexity they've got to their personal tax situation. Now, at the user level, you guys are accessible both on desktop and mobile?
So it's a web app. So we don't have a mobile app. So it's just through web. You can use the app through your phone, but most people don't, because, as you know, on the tax side, it can be a lot of downloading CSVs for other platforms and importing that.
Okay. And as far as integration with other platforms, I think it's obvious that things are pretty turnkey when there's an API out of something like Voyager, BlockFi, Celsius, Gemini, the usual suspects. But would you be able to go into a little bit of detail as far as what happens for DeFi participants? You know, because I know that there's multiple layers to that onion as well. So you've got basic swaps on a DEX, and then you've got maybe liquidity pool, and you've got yield farming. So is there a point at which the DeFi pool gets too deep for the software to be able to kind of interact with? Or what is the, are there any limitations in the DeFi space? Or if not, then how does it function with regards to DeFi, NFTs, self-custody, DEXs, that side of the world?
Yep, it's a good question. So there absolutely are limitations, but a lot of those are being solved as we roll out CoinLedger. So the rebranding that we're doing in January is also with the launch of really an entire new product. And so that will have full Ethereum importing functionality. So with that, essentially, we'll import all of your base level Ethereum transactions. So that's the raw debits and credits associated with any wallet address on the Ethereum blockchain. And then from there, we also have a classification service built on top of that raw data that our engineers are constantly churning out integrations with various protocols, for example, Uniswap, Compound, Aave. And so the launch of CoinLedger will be rolled out with full Uniswap support as well as full OpenSea support. So if you import any Ethereum address, will also classify all of the transactions that transacted with the Uniswap smart contracts or the OpenSea smart contract. Anything else will just be raw debits and credits that get pulled into your account, and you can manually classify those as needed. And over time, our team will continue rolling out more and more integrations with the most used smart contracts and protocols on those platforms. Soon after Ethereum, we'll move into the Solana ecosystem as well as the other blockchains. But upon launch of, essentially the V1 of CoinLedger, it's mostly focused on the Ethereum ecosystem.
So in a practical matter speaking, what happens to someone, like what does someone do if you cover most of their transactions and most of what they've done, but they've also maybe, operated on Polygon or on Solana or a different network? What do they do in that instance? So there's a bunch of people on Elrond and, Luna that are playing around in those ecosystems. What do they do if they don't have a full solution? How do they fill in the gaps there?
Yeah, so there's a couple of options. One is you can manually get anything into the app, meaning, we have custom spreadsheets that you can fill out to import that type of transaction activity. But if we don't support it, right, that's not a great user experience. So if we don't support something that you're very deep in, we might not be the best solution for you at this time.
Okay. Is there actually legal clarity from a tax perspective as to how those different products and opportunities in the DeFi space even work? That's to me one of the hardest questions to answer, and you know, coming at it from the crypto side facing taxes versus coming at it from the tax side facing crypto, I think you tend to get different opinions as to the, you know, how solid the legal ground is on how the tax laws are even going to be interpreted in that space. But do you feel confident that there's clarity in the DeFi world?
No, not at all. There is no clarity. And so the way we approach development is we have to take the most conservative approach to all of this stuff and then surface how we're doing it. Now, any super gray area, I mean, you'd be surprised. Like, a lot of it we can leave to the users, because at the end of the day, we're not filing people's taxes, right? We're a tool that you can use to aggregate all of your transaction history and classify it how you want. But for example, something like Uniswap, right, where you're swapping assets or you're providing liquidity, that is fairly clear. Now, the IRS has not come out and said, you know, a swap on Uniswap is a taxable event, right? But that'd be a hard case to argue against. So in like clear-cut circumstances like that, our software obviously can classify all of those. If you don't like that we're treating it as a taxable event, again, then it's probably not a good solution for you. But to your point, you know, we stay as conservative as possible for all of these treatments.
Okay. So I think that that's part of the tax aspect that overwhelms a lot of people too, though. So in the event of an audit, mm-hmm. what role, if any, is there for CoinLedger, CryptoTrader.tax? Is there any kind of support or even advice in terms of how to advocate your position, and if you had to defend yourself in an audit, what is someone to do? Because I know that, you know, not everybody's using a CPA. Most people will, you know, if you've got a short form and it's a fairly straightforward tax return, you're probably in the TurboTax, you know, side of the world. In that case, sometimes you're left defenseless to kind of articulate your position in the event of an audit. So is there any type of audit support from CoinLedger?
Yeah, it's a great question. So in the sense of how our reporting works, so one of the biggest features of the CoinLedger platform is with every tax report, there's a complete what's known as our audit trail report. So that details how every single taxable event was calculated, where data was pulled from, et cetera, so that in the event of an audit, you have a complete trail of how everything happened. Now, in addition to that, we don't provide, right, like audit support as a business. We're very similar to a platform like TurboTax, where at the end of the day, we can't dictate how folks use our software. And so we don't support, essentially, like if you got audited, like we don't put our team on helping you, right? Now, to that extent, we have a lot of content. And again, we're very transparent in how we treat things. And if you come ask us a question about how we treat something, we'll share that with you. But hopefully that kind of answers the question. We would not, you know, be going to court for you.
Right. Okay. And I think that's part of the, you know, I think I'd just rather clarify that, because I wouldn't want people to assume that you would and then feel like, oh, well, I use the service. I've got carte blanche to do whatever now. So exactly. I think that it's important to just have that clarity out there. So to get into a little bit more of the tax questions that we get on a routine basis, or some of the topics that we tend to have to explain, if you would be willing to, would you mind going into a little bit of an explanation of how to establish your tax lot allocation method, whether it be, do you guys offer, I'm assuming, FIFO, LIFO, and HIFO, or I think HIFO is fairly new and somewhat creative, but is it just FIFO and LIFO, or do you guys also have HIFO? And would you be able to explain the three, please?
Yep, we have all three of those options. They're really exactly how they sound. Miles, I'll let you jump in after me, but essentially FIFO, first in, first out, where your tax lots are sold off in the order that you first acquired them, right? So if I bought Bitcoin three times throughout the year, the first tax lot that gets sold off, if I sell a portion of it, is that first Bitcoin. So that can, you know, dramatically have an effect on your overall gains or losses, depending on which way the market has been moving recently. LIFO, last in, first out, the exact opposite, right? The most recent purchase you have is getting sold off first. This can help shield against, like, get you to more long-term capital gains. Again, though, depending on which way the markets have been moving, can be tax advantageous for other ones. HIFO, highest in, first out, a little bit more aggressive. Again, we're not advising users on which option to take. I would suggest you know, meeting with a tax professional and deciding what costing method you feel comfortable taking on both LIFO and HIFO. Those are what's known as specific identification methods, where you have to be able to specifically identify, and the IRS has kind of four criteria laying out how you can do that to actually be able to use those types of costing methods. But it's just highest in, first out. So your highest basis token is going to be what's sold off first, your highest tax lot. Miles, anything that you'd want to add on in there?
Yeah, I think it's important to like take a step back and say, okay, you know, why are these different methods even existing? You know, if you purchase Bitcoin, for example, at different times, you have different basis in each token, and that basis is essential to calculating the taxable income. As you know, to figure taxable income, you have your proceeds minus your basis. And so when you go and sell a token, and you have these different coins that you bought at different times, you know, you have to figure out which token you're selling. The default is first in, first out. And you have, you know, last in, first out, highest in, first out. You know, technically, you could identify, you could track everything and pick and choose whatever coin you want to sell. Not really efficient to do. Now, when we think about, okay, what strategy should I be using? You know, crypto has historically been going up and up. Yes, there's the bear markets, but something like last in, first out is helpful for deferring taxes, because when you're selling the most recent coins first and everything has been going up, you know, you're not selling those coins with, let's say you got into crypto very early, with, you're not selling that Bitcoin that has that, you know, $13 basis or that $1,000 basis per coin. And, you know, you want to defer taxes as much as possible, right? Like, why take the big hit? Why take the 30%? You know, defer. And so by having last in, first out, and in crypto as it's appreciating, you know, you're selling some of those higher basis coins first, which is why there's then a even more specific strategy, HIFO, which is the highest basis first. And there's you know, that is, could be very advantageous, but you have to also think about this from a long-term and short-term perspective. FIFO is default, and FIFO is great because you're most likely to get the long-term gains. When you're selling LIFO, you're much less likely to hit that long-term. And so you have to be aware of that and be conscious of that when you are strategizing as to which strategy you want to take. If you buy a lot of coins, you know, going back to 2017, in December 2017 or January 2018 at the top of the market, and then you continue to purchase coins throughout the bear market, something like FIFO would be advantageous because you'd be selling not only the longer term shares, but also the ones with, in this case, higher basis if the market took a dip.
No, I appreciate it. I think that that's very helpful because we've explained this a lot, even particularly recently, because I think where a lot of folks get confused, and you might have some insight as to whether or not your relationship with Voyager might help in this arena, is I think Voyager takes the FIFO approach assumption, but like we've already mentioned, they don't know your cost basis if you transferred in from outside. So when you transfer in from outside, the app sets your cost basis at whatever the current market price was at that time. And that and a combination of other things, when you take into consideration their FIFO approach, confuses a lot of new participants in the space whenever they start to sell things, because they see their cost average not reflect what intuitively they think their cost average is in their head. So as far as how things are displayed in your platform, is the tax lot allocation method something that is selected at the user level very intuitively? And is it something that is per asset or per portfolio? I heard you make mention there, and I thought it was worth circling back to, that you said that, you know, you could technically pick and choose which coin and how you wanted to sell it for each individual thing. But I think that what I had always been cautioned and what a lot of people tend to be cautioned in the space, and maybe you can debunk it, is that typically you should pick an allocation method for your entire portfolio and stick that way from one year to the next. Because I think the old wives' tale maybe is that trying to hop around between allocation methods that best benefit you at each given time might raise more scrutiny from the IRS. If you were being opportunistic and hopping from lily pad to change between methods. So is it truly as simple as it's your choice, you can do whatever you so choose, or is there a strategy to picking one method for your entire portfolio and kind of sticking with it?
Yeah, so Miles, I can speak to the CoinLedger platform. You can speak more broadly. In the CoinLedger platform, we require that you stick year to year and choose a cost basis method. It's directly in your settings to answer your question of how does that work. You can select FIFO, LIFO, HIFO. But between years, we don't at this time allow users to, like you said, jump from lily pad to lily pad. Again, taking the conservative approach from our end. Speaking more broadly, again, that's up to your risk appetite and how you want to approach your portfolio.
Right. I think it gets into one of those debates between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. And I think that that's where some people get tripped up. But it'd be perfect if you were educated enough on making the decisions to be able to pick and choose at a granular level what you wanted to do. But I think as far as I've seen it offered to people, it's typically broad across the entire platform or across an entire portfolio, which method you're going to choose.
Correct.
Yeah, and to go back to what you were saying, I think for individuals, you are able to pick and choose part of LIFO. Anything that's not FIFO is technically specific identification. And so if you are tracking this stuff, you can pick and choose how you want to sell. Now, the tracking behind this is extremely difficult and was actually a specialty that from my previous firm in terms of tracking equity for our clients who made a lot of their money as founders of their companies. And so we were able to kind of pick and choose as we saw fit and sold the stuff. But, there were teams of people that, not only, set the stuff up, but reviewed it, et cetera. And I think it does raise concerns with the IRS. And does increase your audit risk if you are picking and choosing. But for individuals, you're not forced into a method. That comes from more on the entity side where you have to pick and stick with something. We'll see, it generally makes sense for the basic person that is handling their crypto taxes to stick to a single method. That's generally what makes most sense for a small time person that's, not worth hundreds of millions of dollars, et cetera, that can pay for the compliance and tracking fees.
Okay. I appreciate that. And as far as what's displayed to the user from within your platform, I'm assuming that it will kind of be a bit more intuitive for them to understand their cost average based on which method they've chosen as they've sold off. Because we had somebody that we've been trying to coach over the past week or so actually on the topic, and essentially they bought at every rung of the ladder on the way up and then started to sell, and they were being shown FIFO within the Voyager app and didn't realize why as they sold their cost average was going up. But it was because they were selling the lots that they bought first at the lower prices, and it wasn't intuitive to them. But within your platform, if they were to toggle between FIFO, LIFO, or HIFO, would the cost basis or the cost average that's displayed accurately reflect that to the customer in an intuitive way?
Right. It will be reflected to the customer. I don't know if the way you described it, that's obviously not exactly how it works in our platform, but you will see your gains and losses change as you change between costing methods, of course. Within the platform, they're like, we're not showcasing how every single trade, changes, as that would be very overwhelming to 95% of users, but you will see how things change. Yes.
Okay. All right, great. And then as far as wash sales or loss harvesting, I know that that's probably a hot topic that's likely to change depending on how things go into this next year. But based on the way that things currently sit, what does your platform provide as far as assistance with suggesting wash sales or success, any form of tax loss harvesting mechanism built into the software?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great question. Right now, you know, CoinLedger and CryptoTrader.tax do not, you know, use wash sales within cryptocurrencies, right? As the IRS specifically states them as property. Now, as you mentioned, there's legislation right now that's going through Congress that's essentially trying to add digital assets to that securities type language, which would require wash sales. Now, that's not passed yet, and we'll watch it, but that would likely be forward looking. Now, in terms of the CryptoTrader.tax and the CoinLedger platform, we essentially have what we call a tax loss harvesting report, where we show you all of your underwater positions. So across all of your holdings, we'll show you where your positions are underwater, and essentially those showcase a tax loss harvesting opportunity.
Okay. And for the, you know, you guys are really probably targeted at a fairly retail consumer. So what type of display is there on the user end for them to understand, you know, short-term versus long-term cap gains, or how that might impact their decisions? Is that something that's easy to discern within the app, whether you know, something is booked at a short-term or long-term game?
Yeah, so all of your gains, losses are broken out very clearly into just short-term, long-term gains. That's right into the UI. On the tax loss harvesting side, we haven't built that fully out yet. So right now, our tax loss harvesting is pretty bare bones, where we're just showing your total position and what the value is kind of right now, right? And showcasing where the underwater positions are. So it's kind of on you to kind of go back and see, oh, should, if I sell this right now, am I going to be realizing short or long-term gains? Because that will very much influence your decision, of course, if you want to get out of your position. Into the future, we'll be building way more in-depth tax loss harvesting specific modules, right, that show essentially, hey, let me preview this trade, right, in CoinLedger. If I were to sell this Ethereum, what would be my tax consequences? That's coming in the future.
Okay. All right, great. I think that would be very helpful. Now, we did have a few questions on specific niche sides of the crypto space that I'll maybe give you a quick lightning round here with all the different types that were asked, and you could just maybe elaborate on how they are looked at from a taxation perspective. But we had questions on yield farming, liquidity pools, rewards that are paid, and airdrops. Do you have a way that I know that at a binary level, it's either you gained or lost position, but how would you explain the taxation impact to the retail customer?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, what is so interesting about this space and DeFi is that, you know, it's really pushing the boundaries of what is, you know, financial interactions. And so, you know, now we kind of have to go through all these different interactions and say, okay, how is this classified from a tax perspective? This DeFi world, you know, on a surface level, it can be simple. You know, if you're earning additional tokens, this is ordinary income. So whether this is from airdrops or from earning interest on staking, from mining, you know, this is all kind of additional tokens you're earning. This is income to you, and it's ordinary income. Some of these DeFi protocols operate in a different way. And so when you're interacting with them, there are cases where things are earned through like a token value that increases. So the token increases in value as you're staking. And then it's not until you kind of unstake that you have then created a taxable event. And so in cases like that, that'll be capital gain. And so, you know, operating in this space, you know, in terms of like earning interest earning from mining, earning from airdrops is pretty clear cut. You know, when you have control over those assets is when you have earned those assets, and the value of those assets you have to pick up as income. It becomes more complicated when you start to talk about wrapping these tokens. That is an area that needs guidance from the IRS. If you are using AVE and you deposit your ETH and you get a ETH, you know, what is that? And it's something unique to crypto. Is it a taxable event? Did you dispose of your ETH in order to get a ETH? Or is a ETH substantially identical and is in reality a representation of your ETH? And is that non-taxable? And so this comes up quite a lot in DeFi, whether you're combining two assets to create a liquidity pool, you know, and you get your LP token. Is that a different token, or is that a representation of, you know, what you own in the pool? Is it a representation of the tokens you combined in order to create that LP? And so there is no good answer right now, and you're going to hear different things from different people. But what's important to focus on when you're doing your taxes is, hey, can you give it a best faith effort? That's really important in this time where there's not, you know, solid answers. If you're evading your taxes, you're not filing, you know, you're not reporting income, you know, that's clear cut, and that's, you know, very definitely you should be reporting, then you get into issues. But, you know, if you're doing your best and you, you know, are reporting what needs to be reported, you have a good understanding of where those gray areas may be, you know, you may be able to get away with, you know, working that gray area to a certain extent. And we, you know, we can't give tax advice. The reality is every single one of these protocols operates differently, just slightly differently. And so, you know, it's on the taxpayer to understand this stuff to a certain extent, to talk to their tax professional and try and figure this out. But the reality is this won't be figured out for 2021. And, well, you know, we'll stay tuned to see if the IRS comes out with more guidance, which is really needed in this space right now.
Yeah, I think I really appreciate where you went with that, because you went straight to the meat of the question, and really where I was going next with it is it leads to so many questions with regard to wrapping was one. You know, if I enter a liquidity pool and I go from ETH to wrapped ETH and back to ETH, were those taxable events each step of the way? Is wrapped ETH still technically a different thing? And likewise, while I'm in the liquidity pool, if I'm just doing a basic Uniswap liquidity pool from LINK to ETH, and there's a zillion microtransactions that are happening inside of the pool, and my quantity of each asset is fluctuating the entire time, am I having a million little incremental taxable events every step of the way throughout that liquidity pool? You know, what is, and I think that you alluded to, there's no real clear cut answers, but it also makes it very hard for people participating in that space to kind of put their head on the pillow and feel like they are going to be right. And I guess in what should be, you know, if they try to be punitive and audit someone's taxes and then tell them that they were wrong, they're going to do that in a resolute way based on some type of a black and white explanation of how they came up with that decision. And I guess the blindly stabbing in the dark, hoping that you did it the right way aspect of it is quite challenging to find peace of mind in, you know, and even like you mentioned with synthetic, I can think of a million scenarios that don't have, as far as I understand it, clarity. You know, if you don't have 32 ETH to stake ETH waiting for ETH 2.0, you can stake using protocols like Staker.io and you're either going to get A ETH tokens or F ETH tokens, and one acts like a synthetic bond, and the other one acts like a synthetic futures product. And one of them, the like exactly like you mentioned, the value of the token goes up. The other, you get an increased quantity of tokens. But the theory behind it all is that when ETH 2.0 actually goes live, you're supposed to just get your pro rata staking rewards back in ETH. And there is, to my understanding, zero clarity on how to even be conscientious and do it the right way, because there's no clear right way. So I guess that's a long way of saying what happens in a punitive capacity, or how can the IRS try to enforce rules that aren't clear to begin with? I know that a best faith effort to do your best is putting you in a better place, but what happens in the event that they do determine that there's a deviation from what they thought you should have done? Is that best faith effort going to potentially absolve you of the difference, or does it maybe absolve you of the penalty assessed on top of a difference? How do they handle that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, should you get audited and the IRS gives you, you know, says, hey, you've been doing it wrong, if you're in good faith, you know, you're protected from, you know, a criminal and penalty standpoint, but the IRS, you know, at the end of it could give you a tax bill and say, hey, pay this, you owe us. And, you know, there's going to be kind of nothing else attached to it. You know, they're going to say, you know, you owe us this much, you know, audit's finished and you're going to have to come up with that money. That's just how it's going to go. And so part of this is kind of, you know, doing things right so that you reduce your audit risk, because, you know, just because, you know, if you get audited, you know, many people aren't going to get audited, and many people who took the same position that you did are going to be in the clear because they'll never get audited. And so part of doing this like good faith attempt is, you know, getting past that statute of limitations where, if there's no substantial underpayment of tax and everything's done in good faith, the IRS has 3 years to audit you. And the IRS is about 3 years behind on this technology. And so, you know, you're kind of in a spot where, hey, don't get audited. Don't do anything crazy. You know, report your earnings. And so you're kind of, you know, who knows? Anyone can get audited. That's just reality. But, there are certain instances that the IRS looks at that increase your audit risk. And so you want to, you know, avoid those. And if you're, you know, making enough money and have enough income tax risk, you probably should be, you know, talking to a CPA and finding a tax professional to help you.
Do you know of a network of CPAs? Is there some type of an accreditation for CPAs that are educated in the space? Because I personally, there's nothing more frustrating than going to a CPA that I'm going to spend, you know, in my capacity with a corporate relationship, you know, 5 to 6 figures on in a year, and then having to sit in a room while I explain to him how this works. Is there any type of an education for CPAs where you can know that your CPA is actually abreast on what's going on, so that you don't have to have the luxury of paying to educate someone?
No, not to my knowledge. I mean, we know a lot of those people. So if you need a recommendation, I'm happy to make them. Now, there's a caveat that these people are very booked out, because as we know, right, there's an insane amount of demand for those types of people and not a lot of supply. So the really good ones have an insane amount of clients. The really bad ones, you know, don't. And so I don't think there's a great answer to that, but I can make recommendations if you personally want some.
Okay. That'd be great. Next question we had was with relation to ways to mitigate tax, you know, so I think we covered some of the strategic ways via tax lot allocation methods and things like that. But as far as, you know, tax havens or how to mitigate tax via charitable donations, things along those lines, are there any fairly accessible to the masses ways of offsetting tax, you know, short of some of the more corporate ways?
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, besides, you know, charitable contributions, that's a great way to do it. You know, making sure if you're, you know, mining or trading NFTs or even gaming in this space, to think of it and set yourself up as a business so you're able to take those expenses. If you're gaming and you're expensing these gas fees and it's just for fun, those gas fees are non-deductible. But if your gaming is a business and you treat it like a business, now there's rules that the IRS has as to what's a business versus what's a hobby. But, you know, one of the best ways is to get your mindset around and start implementing how you're working as if you are a business and filing with Schedule C. That's a great way to start to expense some of this stuff and reduce your income, reduce your net income. In terms of tax havens, you know, being in the United States, the easiest accessible tax havens are states that don't have income tax. You know, the biggest ones are Texas, Florida, and Washington State, as, you know, places people, you know, want to live and you know, population. There's, you know, a handful of states that don't have income tax. That's the easiest. And, you know, all you have to do is set up domicile, move to these new states, and you could be paying much less in tax. In terms of, you know, thinking long term and potentially finding a tax haven, you know, it's difficult because if you have that, you know, U.S. citizenship, you may not want to get rid of that at all. And, you know, you have to, if you don't want to be taxed and still be a citizen, you have to spend almost all your time outside of the U.S., which is just not practical for many people. But, you know, with tax havens, you know, there's Portugal, which is very tax friendly. You know, you see what El Salvador is doing. You know, the biggest question there, you know, Puerto Rico is something that's floated often. You know, it's difficult because when you're that focused, hyper focused on tax, you know, it's easy to start to lose the big picture. Because, like, great, if you want to move to Puerto Rico and then, like, not have capital gains tax and, you know, all that is great, but then you have to live in Puerto Rico most of the year. And, you know, nothing against Puerto Rico, but it's just, it doesn't have as much infrastructure. It doesn't have as much, you know, all these great things that the United States has, you know.
Right. Aren't you also on the hook to settle up your cap gains at the point that you left? Like, you can't just go there and ring the register.
That's correct. Although you could defer selling until you've kind of made that move to Puerto Rico. You know, I'm not clear as to the complete rules, but it is quite complex to, you know, plenty of hoops to jump through, in order to make it happen. And so it's not something to, like, take lightly and just go out and do. Yes, there are those types of rules where, you know, it may not be as advantageous as you think.
Right. Yeah. I don't remember if it's unrealized gains or not, but I do believe that you're only going to have no, even once you're there, you're only going to have no cap gains on the net delta from the point where you did establish domicile there, has been my understanding of it. Because I went deep down the rabbit hole with a number of these things, including, you know, alternate citizenship. And you know, there's Katie the Russian out there that's helping people facilitate citizenship in a bunch of different Caribbean islands. And I think that the most tax advantageous and quality of life advantageous one that she offers is, like, a family of four can go to Antigua for $160,000 and you get citizenship in country. And I think that those solutions have tended to work for people in other countries, but I think U.S. is uniquely positioned in terms of U.S. citizens, even when you expatriate, still being on the hook to Uncle Sam, I think. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you have to settle your tax bill on your way out the door, and then you're still on the hook for the next 10 years, even after you've expatriated. So maybe just to clear up some of the misconceptions, not all of those, like, oh, I'm going to go to the Caymans or those kinds of solutions, really are as rosy as they may seem on TV.
That's right. You know, it especially for U.S. residents, it's especially difficult. And, you know, it may make sense, you know, long term to set something like that up. But, you know, it's not going to be a tax only decision. You know, you're going to want to be in a place that's developing and is crypto friendly and all those things. And so tax probably should not be your only reason for changing citizenship, although it can be a very good one.
So I see that we have Wintermute here requesting to speak. Let's, before we move on to the next question or subject, let's see what he's got so he doesn't forget his question.
All right. Giving him speaker access now. Just give me one sec.
I just added him as speaker. Let's see if he comes through here.
All right, there we go.
Wintermute, welcome. You got a question for the panel or for our guest?
Yeah, thanks, guys. I really appreciate your time here and the services you guys are offering through Voyager or in conjunction with Voyager. I've been in crypto for a while and I've, you know, done taxes since 2017 and had to educate my accountant to the tune of about four figures every year. And he still doesn't seem to learn very fast. But, you know, a couple of things. One is, if I want to take advantage of, you know, tax losses this year, I have to know, you know, in a couple of weeks what my losses are if I want to take them. And as far as I understood what you said earlier, these services won't be available until after the beginning of the year. Is that correct?
No, actually. So CryptoTrader.tax, again, we're rebranding away from that, but that's live right now. So you can go and request the CSV file from Voyager and upload that to CryptoTrader.tax and plug in everything else to get your tax loss harvesting report, which again is kind of a report breaking down where your underwater positions are so that you can realize those losses. So that's live right now. Now, you're not going to be able to get to take advantage yet of like a quote unquote free 2021 report because we need to build out the authentication still, and that's what's under development.
Okay, and the other question I had is you mentioned that you know, you worked with, you know, like Uniswap and Curve, and personally, you know, I don't like to pay those fees, and I've been on every other chain in the universe. And do you guys currently cover any of that stuff, or is that totally out of the picture at this point? And do you think it'll be available, you know, say, like, usually I have to defer my taxes anyway. I don't, you know, usually end up filing until October. So Is that something that would be in development by then, do you think?
So on the Ethereum ecosystem, yes. Now, if you're, you know, operating on Solana and a bunch of other spots, I think I can't confidently say yes or no at this point. But Ethereum is very likely. Same with Binance Smart Chain.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Yeah. That, I mean, that covers some of the water, but like I said, I've been on AVAX and Phantom and, you know, as well as Solana and some other things I think I've forgotten, but,
on that side, it's quite the development endeavor, but we are getting there, and the pace of development is speeding up very quickly. So I think 3 months from now I'll be able to answer more confidently either yes or no. So I guess watch for announcements from us and feel free to just reach out to us, but it's hard to say for sure right now.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for coming up, Wintermute. I did have one more question that came to me via DM. Maybe we can interject with that a minute before I get back to my list and we go deeper into the pool. The question was with respect to earned reward tokens. So if you could explain just how those are taxed if they're not sold. I have an understanding of it, but I think I'd rather hear it directly from you guys.
Sure. Miles, I'll take a shot. You can feel free to correct me where I'm wrong. So it depends exactly on the earned rewards, but I'm going to guess you're referring to kind of like airdrop rewards tokens.
I would suspect probably like Voyager has rebranded interest as rewards because I think it's more palatable to the three-letter agencies, if I had to guess.
Got it. So as Miles mentioned before, that's likely going to be treated as income. And so if you received 1,000 VGX tokens as a reward, right, it depends on what the fair market value of those VGX tokens were at the time that you had dominion and control over them, which is a fancy way of saying at the time you received them, right? And that is income during at that time. So, you know, if I received those tokens in July of 2021, this past July, I owe $1,000 added to my taxable income. And depending on my personal tax bracket, let's say it's at 30%, I'd owe a $300 tax bill on those rewards tokens that I received, regardless if I sell or not. So this is where people can get into some sticky scenarios, because even if you don't cash out of that crypto, you still are on the hook for that income tax bill, which, as we saw in 2017 to 2018, got a lot of people in trouble because they realized all this income and then the market tanked. And so their holdings they never sold was worth less than the tax bill that they owed. You guys probably remember the story of the college kid owing like $400,000 in taxes, right? When his portfolio was worth like a couple thousand dollars. And so you have to be aware that, you know, rewards like that, whether it's staking, mining, airdrop rewards, that's all income upon receipt. And so it, you know, again, it pays to be educated and to understand the taxability of this stuff. But that's how it would work. Miles, I don't know if you want to add anything onto that.
Yep, that's exactly right. In addition, you know, that income you're reporting and picking up, that turns into your cost basis. And so from there, you're only paying the capital gains based on how the cost of the token has fluctuated since when you received it. And so you're not like, you're not ever paying tax on the same income twice in this situation. You know, you have your earned income, you'll pay ordinary tax, and then from that point on, you have your capital gains either higher or capital losses if the price goes down from there.
That's great. I was actually just going to try to clarify on that because I was confused at first. So what basically what you're saying is if someone were to receive rewards and sell immediately, they're only going to pay the income tax and not the gains or losses because it's the same price.
That's right. There'll be a gain or loss, but it'll be zero of gain or loss.
Awesome.
Close to zero. Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Obi-Wan DM'd me a follow-up question. Obi, do you want to unmute and ask?
So if you're getting a staking reward or a reward for holding something on the platform, it's kind of like if that's going to be counted as income and then you sell it later, isn't that double taxation?
Nope. So that's actually a great question. And we kind of hit on. So I'll just give the example. Let's say you're holding Ethereum in Voyager and you receive $300 worth of rewards today. You'd recognize that $300 of income today, but that $300 becomes the cost basis of those tokens. So let's say, just for math purposes, you earned one ETH and it was worth $300, right? I wish. If later, 2 weeks from now, that ETH is worth $600 and I sell it, I'm only hitting $300 of capital gains at that point, because that's the delta of my cost basis when I realized the first $300 of income and the increase of the asset. Let's say it went the other way. Let's say it went down to $150 and I sold. Now I actually book $150 capital loss, which deducts first against all my other gains of that year, then against income, right? So you can see that you're never actually paying tax twice. It's just, you know, there's two different tax events that are happening in that use case.
So like if you had an airlines mile program, or if you had a program where, you know, you get points rewards, you're not taxed on those. Like if it were using like a debit card with rewards, for example, how would something like that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, these rewards on credit cards have been deemed non-taxable by the IRS. And so you know, there may be certain circumstances if you're using a crypto credit card where, you know, that may apply as well. The difference here is airline miles, you know, they don't have a market that you can trade these miles on. And so it's this kind of gray area that the IRS has said, hey, we're not going to tax people on their airline miles. But in a case where you're earning VGX, and that VGX is now sellable at any point and it's up to you, you know, it's a much more clear case that, you know, when you receive those kind of reward tokens, you know, you have had this ascension of wealth is the term, and you are now more wealthy, and, you know, you should be paying tax on that. But that is a great point, and it kind of shows where, you know, there may be resistance from taxpayers. However, it's really facts and circumstances based. We're seeing so many different types of interest rewards, so many different types of, you know, whether it's DeFi or using a crypto credit card, you know, it kind of comes back to, you know, looking at the specific situation and saying, hey, is this more similar to earning interest, which is taxable, or is this more similar to earning, you know, airline miles? And so, you know, there's kind of a, you know, in-depth look that everyone has to kind of take on these protocols, which is really why, you know, these tax professionals are that know crypto are so important.
So to follow up on that, and correct me if I'm wrong, and let me preface this by saying I mean this in the capacity of taxation and not securities law, but would it be fair to say that it's kind of akin to receiving dividends on a stock because you're getting a dividend of something that's worth a value? So you're getting it at the value that it when it was issued, and then you'd be subject to cap gains if you were to sell it based on the delta between the price it was when it was given to you and the price when you sold it?
That's right. These situations are much more similar to earning dividends or earning interest off of, you know, a CD than they are to, you know, earning airline miles. But, you know, again, it's possible that it's a gray area depending on which platform, which situation is going on.
No, I'm glad that it came up, though, because there's constantly a tweet that's circulated and recirculated out there that leads people to believe that any interest that they're gaining or any staking rewards that they're gaining are all tax-free because they're akin to credit card rewards, and rewards can't be taxed. So I think that this is a great topic to kind of elaborate on and make sure that people have a clear understanding on the difference between the two. And I guess, Connor, I see there, I'll get to you in one sec, but I was just curious where products like a StormX fall in the scope of things, or, you know, even on the TradFi side of the world or just normal cash side of the world, something like an Ebates or a Rakuten or an Ibotta, when you're getting that kind of like rebated payment back, are those rewards more akin to credit card rewards, or are they more of a dividend? How does that income get treated?
That's a great question. And, you know, I'm unfortunately, you know, not familiar with how those work. And so, you know, this is a space that, you know, people are taking an in-depth look at it and, you know, really thinking about. I don't have a good answer for you right now. I'd be interested to hear, you know, to look into those further and see how they are taxed.
Sure. No, I appreciate it. And if it's something that you do come across, then please feel free to let us know, and we'll circulate the answer. But I think there's a ton of overlap in the communities between the Voyager community and the StormX community. So I know that there's a lot of StormX users out there that are all probably within their first year of use that I don't think there's any clarity. Nobody knows, are you going to get 1099 for the crypto back that you got, or nobody really has a clue how it's going to work, because they kind of blur the line between you can own the token, you can stake the token, but you're also getting rewards back that are more akin to, you know, the Rakutens and the Ibottas of the world. So it's interesting to see where things develop. And I guess as soon as we figure out the answer, we'll circulate it amongst the community. But Connor, thanks for waiting. What you got?
Hey, so I had a quick question on what constitutes receiving tokens, and whether or not, for instance, like a comp or an Aave, whether you technically have received it as soon as you've been credited and you're able to withdraw the accrued tokens, or if you have to actually physically withdraw it into your own wallet, and which one is the taxable event?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, highlights another issue with this DeFi world. You know, there are protocols where you kind of have an interest accruing, but, you know, until you hit withdraw, it doesn't even show up on the blockchain. You know, the way to figure this out, and the way the IRS is going to look at this is if you have control over these assets, if you're able to move them and sell them, you know, they're going to say that they're yours and that you need to pick up income off of that. And so that kind of comes back to this term dominion and control. And so if, let's just say, like, you know, you have ETH and AETH and you're earning rewards, you know, if you can unstake at any point, and, you know, that ability to unstake at any point kind of is an indication that, you know, you have control over those assets. Now, again, it's different if it's ordinary income where you're having, you know, the number of tokens you have is going up, that's going to be kind of earned income versus a capital gain situation in DeFi where the value of your tokens is increasing and the amount of tokens you have is staying the same, but the value of that token, that may be a capital gain situation. But that being said, it really just comes down to when you have control over it, and it will be different, you know, depending on the protocol.
Yeah, and I can build off that. Like Miles said, it's a gray area, and it is case by case. But the most common one, right, let's say you're contributing hash to some mining pool or you're staking rewards. There's a lot of platforms that allow this where it's showing you your accrued rewards, right? And those technically haven't hit your personal wallet yet, but it's showing them in some user interface, right? This is common on a lot of different protocols and platforms. Again, it's gray. So there you could make an argument both ways. The way that we would make the argument at CoinLedger is that you do have dominion and control over those assets. If you have the ability at any time to click unstake or claim those, you know, and pull them down, right? You do have the ability. So in that case, that would mean you're actually booking income every time that's hitting that wallet, even though it's not your yet personal wallet and you haven't quote unquote claimed them. Other folks might want to take a different approach, right? Saying that, hey, I haven't realized income until I actually bring it down to my personal wallet. But again, that would be the more aggressive approach. The way we look at it is always from more of a conservative lens.
Thanks. Connor, did you have anything else?
Nope, that was it. Thank you for answering.
Well, thanks for coming up. If anybody else has questions too and they'd want to request, please feel free. I've got a couple more questions that we could dive into though. We had left off on tax havens and charitable donations and ways to mitigate tax. Would you guys be able to elaborate on some of the popular tax strategies that revolve around borrowing against your assets so as to never sell them, and how those strategies can either be beneficial or risky or applied just in general?
Yeah. So at a high level, it's what you mentioned. It's, you know, some of the value prop of platforms like Aave or a BlockFi or a Celsius, in that, you know, if I was an early adopter and investor of Bitcoin, or name your cryptocurrency that has gone through meteoric rise, and maybe I have a purchase in my life that I want to make, whether it's a house, whether it's some other large purchase, I don't necessarily want to sell the Bitcoin because that's going to trigger capital gains. But if I borrow against it, you know, that's not taxable income, right? And so that is a very common strategy for that use case. I actually have a friend who just did that. He took out a loan on his Bitcoin, purchased a house. And so that's at its highest level, right? What people can do to avoid capital gains on that. Now you have to keep in mind, you're paying interest on that loan. And so you kind of have to do the back of the napkin math, calculating into, okay, I think Bitcoin's going to continue to go up around this. Therefore, that makes the interest, you know, kind of value accretive for me over time. But it's ultimately up to you in terms of how you want to do it. But at its highest level, you're right. Those loans are not taxable.
Yeah, those loans aren't, you know, taking out a loan is not a taxable event. You know, I think there is a risk of liquidation should price go down enough. And so, you know, that's kind of like worst case scenario. You know, here you are not trying to realize a tax event. You don't want to sell, and so you borrow. But you know, you can lose your collateral if price has gone down enough. And so I think if you're kind of using these strategies, you kind of have to calculate for yourself, you know, if prices go down a certain amount, you know, how much more collateral can I provide? And I think, you know, having some liquidity to, you know, add to your collateral should things get bad, is essential, you know, in this strategy. And so, you know, this is a strategy that's being talked about quite a lot, but it does come with risks. And so you really have to be cautious and aware of those risks before before you utilizing a strategy like this. In the case where you take out a loan and use that loan for investment purposes, you buy more stock, you buy more crypto, the interest expense is deductible. If you take out the loan and you buy a home, a personal home, a personal car, you know, the interest expense won't be deductible. So that may be a factor as well.
All right, great, thanks. And I know that there's also been a lot of discussion around tax mitigation strategies involving the Lightning Network for just pure Bitcoiners. Do you guys have any type of capabilities built yet to digest tax implications of, you know, layer two on Bitcoin transactions, or how Lightning channels impact, you know, when things are considered closed, or is it open and untaxable until a channel is closed and considered settled, or what's the current read on that gray area?
Yeah, so we don't have a good read on that one at this time. Not many of our customers are using Lightning yet, you know, and we really operate based on demand, but you know, perhaps that changes in the future and we have to deploy resources to really go figure out how we want to treat Lightning. But right now, you know, we don't support that on the platform.
Okay. And in general, what would you say the role is, or what's your opinion on the role of Chainalysis in the space and how it's used or how it may be used in the future?
Yeah, that's a great question. So obviously they work and their clients are governments, among other folks. And so, you know, they have contracts with the IRS to essentially help, you know, auditors and tax examiners, you know, go through blockchain data. I don't have much insider knowledge into how those relationships are structured. So no more than anyone else on this call. But yeah, they're definitely being used.
They don't sound like friends, that's for sure.
Yeah, 2 years ago the IRS reached out to us and asked if we would help them audit people, and we said no.
That's awesome. You probably just gained a lot of friends on this call.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. Their chief, whatever, put out like a white paper asking for like private contractor help, and they sent it out to all the cryptocurrency tax software companies. So that was funny.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I don't have a whole lot of other questions prepared, so if anybody else has more questions from the community, please feel free to come on and speak up. Request speaker, be happy to put you up here. Miles, David, I appreciate you guys taking so much time. I know we put you through the firing squad tonight a bit, but one other question that I just had to circle back a little bit to where we were, as far as the rewards that are given and the timing at which they're given, and I know that you guys have mentioned domain and all that. What's the right answer as far as what oracle to trust when determining the price point for you to take that ordinary income? Like, this isn't as cut and dried. There's a million different exchanges. If you were trying to prepare your taxes, do you just make a best faith effort to determine which oracle to trust based to determine the price point at the time that it was given to you?
Yeah. If you're using software like us, you don't have to worry about that. So our historical price engine aggregates prices from multiple exchanges, all the data aggregators, and we kind of use the best of the best. Now, if you're doing it alone, again, it's about a best faith effort. If you know you're using, whether it's a Nomix or a CoinMarketCap or your exchange that's obviously quoting your prices, you know, that's a best faith effort. Miles, I think there's specific guidance on this too, but I don't know if you have any things to add on there.
Nothing too much here. You know, it's going to be, you know, if you come up with a system, you know, you should probably stick to that system so you're not kind of playing the game and, you know, doing whatever most advantageous to you. So, you know, whatever makes sense to you, you know, I would just stick with.
All right, great. No, I appreciate that, because that's also another confusion. So on a funnier note then, are you guys tied into the same oracle that CoinMarketCap used to tell all of us that we were quadrillionaires yesterday?
No, actually, we tweeted about that. We don't use CoinMarketCap's data. so we weren't calculating people's taxes based on 9 trillion Bitcoin or whatever it was.
If I'm allowed to use CoinMarketCap as my oracle, I'm not going to lie. I'm going to take all my gains for this month based on them as the oracle, and then I'm going to just book the loss for the rest of my life. Because even a handful of VGX at a $12 quadrillion price point should have me covered for losses for a while.
Right. Acquire it on that date and sell it the next when it's dropped 8,000,000%.
Well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate you guys taking the time. I'll go ahead and kick it back to Floki if he's got any other questions or anybody else that's up on the panel as well. But you guys were good sports and went through the gauntlet with us. We really do appreciate it. You're welcome back anytime.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys having us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, well, there we go. We got Yoda showing up, Texas Yoda. Let me give you some access there, and you should be good to go in a moment. Yoda, you have to be on your phone. I'm not sure if you're on a computer or not, but in order to speak. Oh, looks like we're good.
Yeah, I am, guys, and I just didn't want to interrupt. No questions. I did just want to say, you know, thank you guys for the advice and for all the guys in BGX Heroes. Just makes me proud to be a part of this community. You guys continue to do more for crypto than any other community out there. So I appreciate all you guys.
Means a lot, man, especially coming from an OG like you. Seriously.
One thing I would add is from my experience, I would say don't procrastinate on your tax stuff. I know everybody's in a different situation, but when I was first starting out, I tried a lot of different exchanges because I didn't know which one I liked best, and it was, you know, am I going to use this one or this one? Yeah, I went through 6, 7, 8, whatever it was, and it can get a little confusing. So, you know, I just want to say that the earlier you can kind of get a head start and start organizing, it's going to benefit you. Because, I tried a lot of different things, realized that there's not really support for some things, and it could take some time. So I would just, you know, suggest that to everybody. It seems like Crypto Trader Tax, CoinLedger, they've got a good thing going. So, you know, it doesn't hurt to get started on it and kind of see where you're at. It'll definitely benefit you in the long run.
Yeah, that's a very good point that I'll just add on. You know, our software at the end of the day is only as good as the data you provide it. And so a lot of people are missing data, you know, or they forget something they've used and then they get mad at us saying, hey, your software is wrong. And it's not that we're wrong. It's just that you haven't imported from some exchange or some wallet. So we're missing some of your cost basis data. And so that's a fantastic point that even with software like ours, you still should keep records of what you're using, what platforms you're on, because it's going to make your tax reporting and just accounting for all of this stuff a lot easier.
Most definitely. I feel like this space is going to be rewatched quite a bit. This was really, really useful. If nobody else has any questions, I got one. It kind of ties into Sun Tzu's as well, but I see some mics flashing. I want to give the floor to Obi-Wan as our newest panel member. I saw you there. You got something for us, Obi-Wan?
Yeah, I was just going to go back to the StormX thing. So the way StormX works is it's an app where you can shop and get discounts for shopping. It's a referral program, and they give you, instead of cashback rewards for shopping, it's crypto back. And so it's kind of like you go and you buy something in the old days, like you go to the Circuit City or whatever, and you buy a printer and they give you a rebate for the ink or, you know, something along those lines. I was just wondering, I've never gotten a tax form for rebates for checks from anybody. Wondering if you had comments on that, Miles.
Yeah, I'm excited to like dive into this, especially since, you know, crypto's gonna, you know, come up with every potential financial transaction. And so I don't have an answer for you right now, but there are many cases where you have maybe small amounts of income that are just de minimis or just so small that, you know, the correct answer is to pick up the income on your return. And it just doesn't happen, nor is it worth the IRS to pursue that. And so, you know, if these rewards really aren't substantial, you know, it's probably nothing to worry about. There is a case where someone gamed the system on airline rewards and figured out a way to make hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of airline rewards. And this person was, you know, audited and taken to court, and this individual lost and had to pay income tax on those rewards. And this was a unique situation where the person had accumulated enough where the IRS came in and said, this is actually an ascension of wealth. You're now wealthier than you were before. This is income. And so, you know, you're going to have to decide for yourself based on your situation, you know, what the best route is.
I have a question. Are you spending crypto on the site to acquire goods, or it's just solely you're getting rewards back in crypto?
You're getting rewards back in crypto for buying things on like Macy's or at Nike.com.
Got it. Yeah, that's good homework for us to take away. Again, I haven't dealt with StormX actually quite often. I think I've heard them advertised before, but we'll have to go back and get back to y'all on what our opinion is based on the circumstances of the platform.
There's a ton of overlap with the Voyager community, so I'm sure that'd be a good one to get out in front of, because I'm sure it won't be the last time that you're asked.
Totally.
Yeah, it's very possible it's non-taxable. It's very possible. And it's also very possible that, you know, picking it up, you know, now when it's not worth that much, picking it up right away, recognizing that income kind of substantiates your basis to a certain extent. And so you're less likely to have problems later on. You know, there is advantages to picking up the income if it's not that much. And so, It's possible, though. It seems likely that based on, you know, what you're describing, purchasing something, getting rewards back may not be taxable. I can't say for certain.
No, that's good to hear. I hope that's the case. The other thing, too, is some questions I've received in regards to gas costs or network transaction fees. Is that something that is deductible?
Yeah, it depends. That's a great question. What context? For example, if it's to facilitate a transaction, for example, in Uniswap, right, you have to pay gas to swap between tokens. That can be added to your basis, which would lower your gain or increase your loss on that transaction. Network fees, just transferring from one to another, no. But Miles, maybe you want to clean up where I left off on this front, because it is a little bit complex.
Yeah, it comes down to, you know, what the use is. If you're using Ethereum fees for investment purposes, you know, the gas fees are going to be deductible. Now, you know, it becomes harder to go that route if you're making all these transactions, moving from, you know, wallet to wallet, and then every once in a while, you know, you're making a sale. You know, then the question becomes, well, what were all those other transactions? So, you know, you may have a case for saying, okay, moving from one wallet to the next, and then, you know, and then selling, you know, both the selling gas fees and the moving from one wallet to the next could be considered an investment. But definitely when you are selling and using Uniswap, then, you know, those fees associated, if they're investment purposes, you know, those fees would be deductible. If you have a business and, you know, those, you're running a business, whatever it is, your NFT business, you know, the fees, the gas fees are a deductible business expense. If you're playing, you know, I mentioned this earlier, if you're playing Axie Infinity for fun, you know, those gas fees are not deductible. If you're testing stuff out, you're testing out security, you know, that's going to be considered a hobby rather than investment, you know, probably not deductible.
Yeah, so the infamous Ethereum double dip, where you have to authorize a protocol to have access to your wallet and then proceed with the swap. Both of those, I guess you could consider business transactions.
That's right. You know, you may want to consider those investment transactions.
Right.
Well, we've got a couple more questions that came up. So Kronos, we'll go to you first, and then NFT Tech, they will come to you after Kronos, okay?
Okay. Hey, good evening, guys. Thank you very much for all the great insight. The following is really kind of like a basic question, but I'll ask it anyway. So a lot of people are typically in this forum will probably use Voyager for the most part. In those cases with Voyager, we can go ahead and request the tax form, if you will, the CSV file from the year starting in January, I suppose. So do we interface with your software at some point in time, Miles, David, and then we send it over? If we're working with an accountant, then we send it to that accountant for taxing purposes?
Right. So the flow you described is kind of how it's historically worked within Voyager, right, where you can request your transaction history, which is essentially just a CSV file, kind of like a spreadsheet. In the future, what we're working towards within the next month and a half is you'll essentially just click a button and all of your transactions from Voyager will be automatically imported into CoinLedger, so you don't have to mess with any CSV or file types. It'll populate in your CoinLedger account. Then we can generate your gains, losses, income tax forms like you said, you can do those what you need, whether you're using a TurboTax or whether you kind of have a tax guy who you go to. Either of those platforms can use our forms essentially to handle your full tax filing.
And that capability of that button would be within the Voyager app?
Correct, or from an email, yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kronos. NFT Tax, what you got?
Hey, guys. I just want to say thanks for doing this. You guys are doing a great job. I just wanted to touch on the rebates thing. It sounded kind of, to me, It's almost like Rakuten or Ebates, and how you purchase something and then you get, you know, some cash back either, you know, through PayPal or whatever. It's something like the company Lolly, I think is the name of it.
Yep. They're very similar.
Yeah. So to me, that's not really a taxable transaction. It's just a rebate. It's almost like it's almost similar to credit card rewards in my mind. But, you know, consult your own tax person. But that's just my opinion. And then I want to echo the sentiment that you guys talked about with, you know, do as much as you can now to gather the transactions. You know, try to estimate your tax liability as much as you can now so that you can set that money aside. And if you're very crypto heavy and fiat broke, you know, maybe it's a good idea to figure out that tax liability now and set that money aside in fiat. That's just a little bit of advice.
Yeah. Yep. I agree with both of those things. I think it's likely that we take a look at StormX, and it's definitely sounding like it's not going to be taxable, but we'll get back to y'all.
All right. Thanks for that. Did you have anything else, NFT tax guy?
No, that's it. I appreciate what you guys are doing.
Sure. Thanks for coming up. CoinLedger guys, I did have one more question. You give me enough time and I'll think up enough. So I do notice a lot of people in the audience that I know personally have plans post bull run. Let's assume that everything goes back on the tracks and we're back into the blow off top that everybody expects, and everybody can book the profits that they thought that they were going to be booking right now, and we move forward. There's a number of folks in the room right now that I know intend to diversify into ASICs and some mining equipment in the maybe lull between the blow off top and the next halving. You kind of touched briefly before on some of the benefits of incorporating, but would you be able to just kind of give a cursory 30,000 foot view of things that you would take into consideration if you were getting into something like the mining space pursuant to equipment? You know, and you know, what comes to mind for me is you know, depreciation and 179ing of the equipment itself, or, you know, write-offs for any of the electricity or the rack space fees or anything, any of the expenses incurred along the way, maybe what some of the benefits would be to proceeding as an individual versus proceeding as an LLC, or if there's any kind of secret sauce to how to go about those types of operations. Because I think a number of the folks here will end up there if they're not already there.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, you're able to operate a business as an individual, and so you would, you know, file your Schedule C with your income and expenses. Yeah, I think it's important to kind of look at how the IRS differentiates between a business and a hobby. To the extent that you're going and doing this, you know, it really important to save your receipts, to have great records in all of this stuff. One of the biggest audit risk areas is shared use on, you know, your business and your home. So if you have electricity costs, you better have really good records of how much of that electricity cost is personal versus business. You see this with like cars, business cars and whatever. So if you have a mining area, it has to be exclusive to mining. And so it may be smart to kind of set that aside, write down your intentions, write down your, you know, have really good tracking and receipts of all this stuff. You know, you don't want to get audited and, you know, get messed up with the rest of your return as well. And in terms of, you know, setting up an entity, whether it's an LLC or an S corp, you know, and there may be tax advantages to setting up an S corp, but, you know, it depends on your situation. You know, an LLC just really provides you a single member LLC, you know, would provide you liability, you know, it can hide your identity in certain situations, and you know, is protection against, you know, worst case scenarios. It protects your assets, where if you were to be sued, you know, the LLC would be sued, and, you know, they wouldn't be able to go after your, you know, your personal home. And so there's kind of benefits from the limited liability standpoint of an LLC, but you do not need to incorporate or set up an entity in order to get started with mining and have it be a business.
All right, great, thanks. And as far as those that do choose to incorporate, do you advocate for any particular states? I know that there's, you know, you could obviously incorporate in your home state, but there's also, you know, the select few that people tend to opt for, like Delaware, Nevada, I think Alaska, for some aspects of incorporation and trusts come to mind. But do you give any guidance as to the benefits or the pros or cons of any of the states?
I can't, you know, I can't really say for certain, you know, what's going to be best. You know, Delaware is used because it's easy and cheap, and the rules are favorable. And so, you know, at least for trusts and otherwise, you know, those types of questions will be better suited for, you know, your tax professional.
Okay, great. I appreciate it. NFT tax guy, you're back. What's up?
Sorry. One other thing I wanted to kind of touch on is the use of Roth IRAs and cryptocurrency, and see what you guys' thoughts are. And also the potential for the elimination of the backdoor Roth. So if there's people in here that would want to get money into a Roth IRA using Bitcoin or Ethereum, but are over the amount that would phase you out, it's something you'd want to consider before December 31st. So I don't know if you guys want to touch on that a little bit.
Yeah, I think you make a great point. Not everyone is aware of, you know, the tax advantages of these retirement accounts. You know, there are certain, requirements, you know, you have to be under a certain income, you know, to get the tax benefit off of, you know, you can, you know, contribute $6,000 if you know under certain circumstances to a self-directed Roth IRA and you know invest in Bitcoin and all gains are you know from then on out non-taxable. You know you won't be able to access that money until you're retired. But the backdoor Roth is still available for now, and it is a tactic that is used quite often. You would have to, you know, move your money from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA. And when you move it out of the traditional IRA, you know, you're taxed as if you are fully withdrawing it. You know, you don't get the penalty, but you're going to be taxed on, you know, fair market value. Further, it's not capital gains at that point. It'd be ordinary income. So that's something to be cautious of as well. But if you're kind of in the same year setting up, you know, the traditional IRA, contributing to it, and then, you know, rolling it over to a Roth IRA, that's definitely still available to people.
And we have up to up to May or April of the following year to make contributions for the previous one, right?
You do. You have until the April 15th tax deadline to make contributions into a Roth. But what I was saying is the backdoor Roth IRA, there are specific rules around doing this. That could be taken away with the current legislation that's in Congress. So if your income is higher and you would not be eligible to directly contribute to a Roth IRA, I would suggest doing some research on how to do a backdoor Roth.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that suggestion. I know that that's come up a couple times in the Discord too. So if anybody hasn't already looked into it, you probably should, because there does seem to be a ticking clock on a lot of these tax advantageous ways of proceeding, because we've got to pay for all this helicopter money. So you guys just covered the IRAs, which I think is a good topic. I have a question about the other side of the spectrum, though. So nobody in the CeFi space or the brokerage or exchange space is really offering custodial services in the crypto environment. You can't set up custodial accounts for kids or anything like that, but there's nothing preventing self-custody for minors or anybody under the age of 18. So is there anything from a taxation perspective that should be considered if you are intending to have cryptocurrency either gifted to or purchased on behalf of a minor? Is that something that is even written yet, or is that also wild, wild west at this point?
You know, in terms of like generational planning, you know, if you were to do that, highly recommend, almost necessary, to speak to a tax attorney. You know, you can, you know, set aside money for your children, but you'll want to have it set up so a trust is owning that money, because if you can kind of pull that money back to yourself, if you have access to it in a certain way, then the IRS is going to say, well, you never really gave the gift completely. You never really gave it away because you can pull it back. And so, you know, these rules are extremely complicated and really requires an attorney to draft up the trust agreements and set things up a way that, you know, you're not going to have these situations sometimes decades later, sometimes after the person has passed away, where the IRS is clawing back, you know, money that you thought you gifted out and you thought was out of your estate, but really turns out that it wasn't handled right and it wasn't completely out of your estate.
All right, great. I really appreciate that, because that comes up often a lot as well. So with that, Floki, I'll kick it back to you. We're getting close to our 2-hour mark here, so I'll toss things back to you. Thanks again, guys, for everything that you've contributed.
And Michael, thank you. Kicking butt with the interviewing skills, I have to say. We all really appreciate you big time. And with only having about 2 minutes left, I wanted to ask you guys, what would you tell someone, you know, a first-time crypto tax guy who is intimidated to get this process done? You know, ballpark, how much time should they set aside? And, you know, what would you just tell somebody fresh into this crypto tax thing to make sure they don't feel intimidated and preventing them from taking the right steps?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great question. I would say, first and foremost, it's not as complicated as it may seem, or even it sounds like on a call like this, where we are diving into very nuanced elements of this. For 90% of people in crypto, they don't have extreme complexity. We see this in our data from our customer base, right? They're just using right now centralized exchanges. If that's you, it's really easy. So I wouldn't be afraid. In terms of time allocated, again, it very much depends on user to user. If you just have a Voyager account and a Coinbase account, or name your CeFi platform, honestly, 30 minutes, an hour maybe. If you have more complexity, like some of you potentially on here, if you're in DeFi heavily and NFTs, right, allocate more time. But, you know, we have, you know, 35 people in our company who are all dedicated to making this as easy as possible for folks. And it's not perfect today, but, you know, we're dedicating a lot of resources to making it easier and easier every week, month, year. So I wouldn't be afraid. We staff a big customer service team during tax season to answer any questions you guys have. But I still think getting started sooner than later makes sense. So that's my 2 cents.
Perfect. Exactly what I was looking to end on. I want to respect everybody's time here. Any last minute things from the panel or from you guys, our guests, our CoinLedger guests, that you'd like to get out? And then we're going to close out.
Yeah, I wanted to thank all you guys, everyone here. This is a great group. Really smart questions, really impressed. You know, you guys challenged us tonight. So, you know, it's been a great experience.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having us on. Keep an eye out for more communication from Voyager as we continue to put the polish on all of these developments. But we're really, really excited to be officially a part of the community. And it's been fun flexing our tax brains here tonight.
We appreciate it. I know that was a very long 2 hours for you guys, I'm sure, but it's essential. I'm glad that these are recorded and streamed on on our community member Crypto Airborne's YouTube channel, because they will serve as a great reference for people to be able to go back to. So we appreciate you guys taking the time.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would just say the same thing. I mean, it's, I don't know where you guys are at in the States, but it's 11 p.m. here, and I got up at 5:30 for work, and it's a long day, but I can't say how much I appreciate you guys coming on.
Let's get a round of 100s for our guests. I want our audience here giving them 100s all the way around. Thank you so much.
100, 100, 100. No, thank you guys. I'm going to bounce too. It's 10 p.m. where I am. I'm in Austin, Texas. But still going to get a few things done before I hit the hay. So thank y'all. We'll be in touch. Take care.
Yeah. We got to get you a hero too. Both of you guys. You got to pick your favorite character and get in this and play along with us. All right, everybody.
Awesome.
Strength and honor, everyone. Peace out.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was an AMA with Miles Brooks, the CoinLedger Director of Tax Strategy and CPA. It was hosted by VGX Heroes. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. The dirt trying to find the treasure, learning how to mix this business with pleasure. I'm kicking a lecture, spitting conjecture, high as a bird while I'm flipping the gesture, living like a jester, investing these extras, dissecting a mess, a eagle looking headstrong, infinitesimal, the spitting is next world, and if you don't agree, well then I'm afraid you're dead wrong. So leave the mess hall and clean your plates up. I can't believe the rest of y'all feed on makeup, bereavement breakup to rearrange your wake up, big ol' bloody mess like a scene from Braveheart, driving race cars beat the fate. It's hard to meet your maker when the features ain't marked, trying to slide underneath the paywall. I'm afraid this motherfucker's gone AWOL.
You had best unfuck yourself or I will unscrew your head and kick down your neck.
Sir, yes sir.
Private Joker, what did you do on my beloved gold?
Sir, to kill sir.
No, you're a killer.
Sir, yes sir.
Let me see your war face.
Sir,
you got a war face?
Living on the earth, trying to mine some headspace. Give a little gift like I'm lifted dead weights. The risk of resting kicks the nest egg. Square in the nuts, y'all feel intestate. The breeze swept in, no need of resting. The least depressing, so sweet but messy. I need the best day to keep professing and hope my body doesn't leave behind a red stain. Pouring out little liquor for the dead states while the rest wait and bleed domestic. No means to gestate, breeds the best cake. Beauty on the back of the queen she just date. So take a little dive down a K-hole while I flip the B-roll right into A-roll and make the payroll go a little further. Replace the merger with the tainted version.
I'm a snowman!